remember that TV show Taxi? Do you remember that show?
Yes.
Did you enjoy it? Were you a fan?
I watched it. I'm not sure I was a fan, but I watched it.
I suppose that makes sense, yeah. But I suppose if you've been driving a taxi all day, you don't want to go home and watch a show about taxi drivers, do you, really?
Not really, no.
Probably go home and watch Columbo.
Well, I don't know about who's Columbo.
You don't remember Columbo?
It's a dark show. It's sad, you know, everybody's there. They all want to be out. No one wants to be there. And they sort of went for sad, and that's a tough choice.
I think that Bob James, when he did the soundtrack, he really set up the highs and the lows and the meandering continuum of life.
Every other sitcom was shot on tape, and they all had these kind of, they almost sounded like jingles, their opening songs. And here was Taxi. Hearing the music for the first time, I remember going, oh my gosh, this is not at all what you would expect.
People know Judd Hirsch and Christopher Lloyd and Danny DeVito and all these people, like Tony Danza, they all came out of this show. And to have so many people come out and become stars out of the cast, instead of just one or two, but virtually everybody, that's an amazing legacy.
It might be surprising to hear that Taxi was one of the most influential sitcoms in American history. It only lasted 5 seasons and doesn't often feature heavily in those 1,000 most loved sitcoms sort of shows. But Taxi is one of those rare programs whose reputation and legacy has grown greater and greater in the years since it went off the air. Cast members like Danny DeVito and Christopher Lloyd went on to have pretty stellar careers, but interestingly, so did the backroom boys, the writers, producers and directors. People who worked on Taxi went on to set up Cheers, work on Frasier, The Simpsons and The Larry Sanders Show, and write films like Terms of Endearment and The Player. They weren't an untalented bunch of people. Can you say untalented? It seems to me that it's high time that Taxi is given the respect it deserves. So, this is my tribute to the Sunshine Cab Company, a place where hopes and aspirations were squashed flatter than a New York hot dog under the wheel of some kind of yellow cab. It's not a great metaphor. I wish I hadn't started it.
Like it! 3 cabs just came in and need repairs. What are you doing in these glad rags?
But because you said I could have the day off.
Well, forget it. I got a garage to run here.
Yeah, but Louis, you promised.
Right, I promised. Now I'm breaking my promise. Get back to work.
You are a nasty man.
I'm not nasty. A lot of guys wouldn't have given you the day off in the first place.
Danny DeVito and Andy Kaufman there in Mamma Gravis, directed by James Burrows for Paramount in 1978. I've spent a bit of time in Hollywood recently. I don't want to show off, but I've been in Hollywood occasionally, and it surprises me how seriously the sitcom industry still takes Taxi. Rob Long is a Hollywood sitcom writer who also writes books about his struggles with the studio system. Watching Taxi was part of his writing apprenticeship.
Absolutely. In fact, it was part of the education. You had to watch it. When I first moved here, I went to film school. Between 11 and 12 at night, they would show Cheers and Taxi. And if you had any aspirations to write, you had to watch them all.
Taxi was set up by a group of writers who had previously worked on The Mary Tyler Moore Show, regarded as a classic in the States. One of the most talented writers of the group was a man called James Brooks. The writer and TV critic Frank Lovitch, who wrote a book about Taxi, recalls Brooks's power.
He basically was given carte blanche to do anything he wanted. Taxi, very rarely, was given an on-air commitment for 13 episodes without a pilot, without a script, based solely on the reputation of Jim Brooks and the all-star team that he fielded.
James Brooks's all-star team included the writers and producers David Davis, Stan Daniels, and Ed Weinberger. They took the decision to break away from the Mary Tyler Moore Show, or MTM, to set up their own company.
They wanted a waspy name, and so they happened to see a sign in an antique store in Los Angeles from an English pub, and it said Charles Walters. So they liked it, and they brought it in, and said, we'll call ourselves the Charles Walters Company. Then they found out there already was a Charles Walters. He was an MGM choreographer-director, a few movies you might have heard of, like Easter Parade. So they had to add a first name, and they came up with the John Charles Walters Company. But like Monty Python's Flying Circus, there is no John Charles Walters.
And here's a little bit of TV trivia for you. I don't know if you're the sort of person who likes TV trivia. I know I am. But you know that bit at the end, after the credits, where you see a grumpy executive walking down the corridor, and it goes...
Right, Mr. Walters.
Well, that was the writer, Ed Weinberger.
It's not an amazing piece of trivia. I mean, I wouldn't rush down the pub with it, but there you are. Anyway, back to the programme. Now, they'd got a company together, and they got a deal, but they needed to find a show. Frank Lovitch.
Taxi was based on a magazine article in a 1975 issue of New York Magazine by a very good journalist named Mark Jacobson, who had been a cab driver. And he wrote about a place called the Dover Taxi Garage No. 2 down here in Greenwich Village. And this was the place where all the actors were going to be a cab driver. And there were priests, there were Eastern European disc jockeys, all these things.
Brooks and his team saw the article, liked it, and bought it. But before they wrote a script, they felt that they needed to do some first-hand research, so they visited a local taxi company.
When the show was being created, Jim Brooks told me that there were two moments that made Taxi. Brooks and the rest of the writers went down there one night. The two moments were, one was they saw a cab driver go up to the dispatcher and try to bribe him to get a good cab. And the dispatcher turned around, he saw Brooks and them and said, no, don't do that now. The other moment, they needed to find some way, how do you make a cab driver heroic? And all the cab drivers were waiting around for this one guy, sort of the charismatic, good-looking young guy that they all wanted to have breakfast with when his shift ended. And he came in, and they're all out of breakfast with the Hollywood guys, and saying, well, you know, this person wants to be a boxer, this person wants to be an actor. Me, I'm a cab driver. And that's when they knew that they had the lead character.
Sure enough, that speech became one of the central points in the first show.
Now, you mustn't be too upset with Louis, miss. He's really a very nice guy. He'll give you the scales off his back.
Well, I don't have to worry too much about him. I'm only going to be working here part-time.
Oh.
Yeah, I have this other job where I work...
Yeah, I know. We're all part-time here. I'm part-time. I only work 60 hours a week.
No, really. I really work as a receptionist at an art gallery.
Oh, yeah?
No, I'm not really a taxi
no,
driver.
No, I understand. You see that guy over there? Now, he's an actor. The guy on the phone? He's a prize fighter. This lady over here, she's a beautician. Man behind her, he's a writer. Me, I'm a cab driver. I'm the only cab driver in this place.
Judd Hirsch there in the first ever show, directed by James Burrows. He directed all but one of the first 50 episodes and was heavily involved from the start.
The essence of that show was that it was a place that everybody was trying to get out of except Alex Rieger. And the essence of Cheers was that it was a place everybody wanted to go to. So, I mean, that's the essence.
While that speech might have been the show's essence for the writers, an equally important part of Taxi's life was the actor who played the central character, an ambitious professional taxi driver, Alex Rieger. Now, normally when you're casting a sitcom, you see loads of actors for the main parts. However, with Taxi, only one person would do. TV critic Frank Lovitch.
They said that they did not want to do the show without Judd Hirsch. Everybody connected with the show wanted Judd Hirsch, except the network. They thought he was too ethnic, which was kind of the code word for Jewish. And that's kind of reprehensible, but this was another time.
If the networks were sniffy about Hirsch, he was equally cool about the whole plan. Judd Hirsch was a pretty big name around American theaterland at the time and had already handed in his badge on a couple of TV detective shows. He was disillusioned by the whole world of television, and it took quite a bit of persuading to get him on board. Here he is on Pebble Mill in 1990.
I expect to play every bad guy that ever walked the screen or the stage. I was a sort of a rough and tumble fellow. And when they tell you, and I get my first part in a play, and I'm playing the nice guy. And then I get the next part in a play, and I'm playing the nice guy. And then I get a next part in a movie, and I'm playing the nice guy. And I get a part on television where I figure, then here's where I can really go, you know, mad with what I've learned to do, a character acting. And I'm playing the nice guy.
So, what was it about Judd that made everyone desperate to sign him?
I think in the book we refer to him as having a face like a retired hawk. That sort of hangdog expression. And yeah, it's hangdog, but there's fire in the eyes. And I think that's what it was.
That's why you cast an actor as brilliant as Judd Hirsch to play it, a man who can underplay everything, a man who can react, because he's the sanity in this incredibly weird world. So you have to have a man. You can't teach a guy to do that. He has to have that in him, and Judd had that in him.
You gave him any line, he would legitimize it. And he also, as a character, he was exactly the opposite of what you would ordinarily write. He was a guy who was resigned to being a taxi driver. I think even then, that was pretty revolutionary.
Elaine, are you okay? I mean, the way you've been running around...
Oh, Alex, here... I know what you're going to say. You're worried about me because of the way I've been running around, and I seem to be going in 20 different directions all at once, and you think it's bad for me and kind of dangerous, and I think you're blowing things way, way out of proportion. But okay, I promise you that as soon as everything slows down and I have taken care of everything that's hanging over my head at this moment, I am going to take a nice, long, 3-week bath. And I know I talk too much, I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to lecture.
Mary Lou Henner and Judd Hirsch there in Nardo Loses Her Marbles. After some persuading, they got Judd to do the show. Other members of the cast had to audition, though, and the competition was tough. Even before they started shooting, there was a buzz about Taxi that meant everyone wanted to be in it. Mary Lou Henner, who eventually got cast as main lady driver and mother figure Elaine Nardo, and who'd appeared as Marty in the original theatre production of Grease, back when it was a cutting-edge musical, remembers the casting process being pretty long-winded.
I went to 4 major auditions, and I finally told them on the last one, hey guys, you know, I'm running out of clothes, so you better cast this thing.
Tony Danza, who played the boxing taxi driver Tony Banta, was actually a professional boxer himself, until a casting director caught one of his fights.
I was real good when the guy came to me, you know, because I like to slug. If I had to chase you around, I didn't look too good, but when they came to me, I was pretty good. We had a big battle, and in about a minute and a half, I had him in the first row. I was walking around a ring full of myself, and Larry Gordon looked up at me and said, that's the greatest audition I've ever seen. I just got on a lot, and I parked my car, and the guy said to me, hey, you can't park there. And I said, what are you, a cop? And I was a tough kid, and we started having an argument, and all of a sudden, somebody was tugging on my sleeve, and I look, and it's this little guy. And he says, I'm Danny DeVito, we're working together, come on, come with me. And he got me out of there, and that's how we became friends.
Friends off-screen they may have been, but on-screen their relationship would be a little frostier, as this extract from Paramount's Guess Who's Coming for Breathnish illustrates.
Bad news, Louis.
What?
I got robbed.
Huh?
Oh, honey.
How much they get?
Close to everything, $100.
Nice going, dough brain. I just blew your biggest booking night in 6 months. There, fill out this report and give it back to me, Momo.
What are you getting so mad at me for? The guy could have blown my brains out.
So could a good sneeze.
Danny DeVito was the first big star to come out of Taxi, and it's notable that while in a recent American poll, Taxi was voted the 48th most important sitcom, Danny's character, awful taxi boss Louis De Palma, was voted the most popular character in any sitcom. In a dark show, Louis was its jet-black heart, and his gleeful malice contrasted nicely with driver Alex's dependable moral compass. Here, in Shut It Down from the second series, they're discussing one of Louis's forthcoming court appearances.
I just hope he forgives you.
Mackenzie? He's ready to erect a statue to me. You kidding?
No, I don't mean Mackenzie. You know, when you walk into that hearing room, you're going to be under oath.
Sure.
You know what that means?
Yeah, it means they got to believe you. I love this country.
At the time, DeVito had been trying to work his way into films, but the part of Louis appealed to him. Here he is appearing on Wogan in 1990, talking about his original audition.
I wanted the part really bad, and I know that you have to make a good first impression. So I was introduced to the producers. I was brought into the room, and they're all sitting around this beautiful office. I mean, really well-appointed office. And there's Jim Brooks and Ed Weinberger and Stan Danza. One of them gets up. He's got his sleeves rolled up. He's got a script in his hand. And I'm standing in the doorway. I know the hot seat is right across there. This is where the actor's nightmare. You got to go and sit there and audition. And I said to them, there's one thing I want to know before we start. Who wrote this shit? And
I how'd you get a part?
And I threw the script on the table. And, you know, I took one step in total terror, and then they just, like, they fell apart. They were laughing their heads off.
Oh, that was it.
And that was it. You know, I walked into their lives.
Taxi was a hit straight away in the US, instantly becoming a fixture in the top 10 rated shows in America and winning 3 Emmys. But writer Rob Long believes its success was built on well-established principles of theatre.
It's stage play. Absolutely stage play. Big flat set. And the cameras sort of get in and out of the way of the audience, you know, and it was an absolute stage set. You know, you couldn't bring anybody on stage or off without a joke. I mean, it really was like 1930s Broadway writing.
Scratch beneath the surface, and you can see some pretty complicated writing going on.
It actually takes a lot of time. How do you get somebody from one end of the stage to the other? What lines you give him or her to cross? And they need a joke to exit on. So you have to time it perfectly, so by the time they get to the door, they can drop their joke and then go. People can only enter or exit on a laugh. I remember not knowing that was the rule, having even seen 100 hours of Taxi, thinking, oh yeah, I guess they do that. Yeah, wow. It's hard work.
And this theatrical attitude made its way to the actors.
This show came with the attitude of everybody getting together to put on a play. We're going to do a show. We're going to have fun. These are creative guys that are writing for us. We got a wonderful director. James Burroughs is going to direct. And gosh, we're going to do a show for people.
Randall Carver was a regular cast member for the first series. In fact, his character John, the small-town boy in New York for the first time, is the device by which we're introduced to the rest of the characters. But while audiences across America quickly became familiar with the characters of Bobby, Elaine, Alex, Tony, Louie and Latka, John was dropped after the first series. Director James Burroughs.
What happened was is that he bled into Bobby's character and he bled into Tony's character. And so it was hard to write. I think there were seven regulars. It was hard to write for an eighth regular. There was not enough distinctive about his character.
I felt like they lost their hook on what this fellow was or what John Burns was about. All the writers and all the creative people are from the East Coast, New York people, right? They had really very limited knowledge of what it's like to be a kid from Northwest Texas, a town of 2,700 people, moving to New York and being a cab driver.
Randall's place was soon filled by a character who had made a brief appearance in the first series.
Reverend Jim, I'm Cabby Alex. Listen, I don't want to be impolite, but you are a minister, aren't you?
Certainly. I was ordained in 68. The church of the peaceful. The church was investigated and cleared completely.
The Reverend Jim, played by Christopher Lloyd. Heard there in an extract from Paper Marriage, directed by Jimmy Burrows for Paramount in 1978. He was a fully formed character from his first appearance. The faded denim jacket and jeans never changed. They were the original clothes Lloyd had auditioned in. And Mary Lou Henner remembers his costume wasn't the only thing that remained constant.
We called it an Italian run-through, where we do all the lines just lickety-split. Everybody just sort of, because you can hear the music of a piece when you do it, because you're just saying your lines as fast as you possibly can. And I always say that, you know, the rest of us were on 78, and Jim still stayed on, like, 33. You know, he, no matter how, even speeded up, Reverend Jim had his own rhythm.
Have you ever experienced loss of consciousness, hallucinations, dizzy spells, convulsive disorders, fainting, or periods of loss of memory?
Well, hasn't everyone?
I flew to New York once, and they gave me a bunch of taxi scripts to read on the way. And Glenn Ellis had written that script, and the stewardess came over and asked me if I was all right because I was laughing so hard. That is one of the funniest shows we've ever done, with one of the biggest laughs. What does a yellow light mean? It's one of the biggest laughs I've ever done.
The scene appears in an episode called Reverend Jim, A Space Odyssey. Just to quickly set the scene here, Jim's about to sit his taxi driver's exam, and the rest of the crowd are hanging around to help him out with any difficult questions. All right, now listen to him.
What does a yellow light mean? Slow down. Okay. What? Yellow light mean? Slow down. Okay. What?
If you look closely, you can see Mary Lou Henner jabbing a pen into her hand to stop herself from laughing. Although you can't really look closer because we're on the radio. My mistake. Taxi is a funny mix of characters. On the one hand, it's a very realistic show. Alex, Elaine, Tony and Bobby are all quite realistic figures inhabiting an easily recognisable world. By contrast, the Reverend Jim and Louis De Palma are almost cartoon-like.
It was almost as if they designed it where Judd and I were the parents of this wacky group, and then Tony and Jeff were kind of the kids, and then Latka and Reverend Jim and Danny were like the crazy relatives, and then, you know, he was the errant uncle or something like that.
Ah, yeah, Latka. If anyone's reputation has grown over the past 30 years, it's Andy Kaufman's. From being just the funny foreign mechanic in Taxi, he's gone on to have the full Hollywood biopic treatment, perhaps because of his untimely death in 1984. Frank Levitch.
He had a special deal where he didn't have to go in for rehearsal every day. He would just come in, do his bits, and he had a lot of input. The character that he was playing was basically a version of the character that he did in his stand-up comedy act. And even just to call it a stand-up comedy act is not doing it justice, because Andy Kaufman was, before the term was invented, I think, a performance artist. His life was his performance.
Andy was hired after making his name playing stand-up clubs as a guy who couldn't speak English. Judd Hirsch remembers discussing his role with Jim Brooks.
They said, we're going to do sort of like a gang show. We're going to do a show with a lot of people who are all going to be sort of together. We'll write shows for everybody. I said, well, who are they? And they told me, Andy. I said, I know him. And I said, Andy Kaufman. I said, I know him. And I said, well, wait a minute. Wait, he's playing the part of what? Who's Andy going to play? He said, he's going to play the guy who can't speak English. And I said, that's the one I wanted.
Andy Kaufman has since been portrayed as a troubled genius who only did Taxi for the money and was a difficult person to work with. But that's not how director James Burrows remembers him.
Andy was never difficult. Andy did anything you wanted him to do. He had day-night rehearsal because he would be up till 4 or 5 in the morning writing and thinking about his comedy, and not necessarily the show, but what he would do in his act. So he didn't come in until after lunch. But when he came in, he was professional. He knew his lines. He had a photographic memory. And when you acted with Andy, that character was not of this world, so it was Andy's show when you acted with him. It was his scene because he was out there. Judd used to love it. Judd always wanted to play his brother.
Goodbye, hey, Blanca. Blanca, where are you going to take her?
Oh, I'm going to show her all the sights of New York City. I'm going to show her the lights of Broadway and the Statue of Liberty and the apartment of a lonely, lonely man.
Andy Kaufman in an episode that introduced us to Simca Dablitz called Guess Who's Coming to Breffnich. As Frank Lovitch said, Andy Kaufman didn't stop performing when the working day was over. As Taxi became a successful, critically acclaimed show, and even though he didn't need the money, he took a second job as a waiter in a local cafe. Mary Lou Henner remembers another after-hours exploit.
Andy was amazing because he was such a professional when he performed, but he was wacky. I mean, the first break that we were on, Judd and I were doing publicity in New York, and we're down in the Bowery, and we see Andy panhandling. And, you know, this was 2 months after the show had gone on the air, and everybody was, you know, doing very well. So we knew that it was not out of necessity. And it's like he just wanted the experience of being a bum.
But there's no doubt his most extreme moment on the Taxi lot came when he assumed the role of his alter ego, Tony Clifton. Tony was a fat, sweaty, obnoxious Las Vegas lounge singer, the last person you'd want on the set of your well-run, successful sitcom.
In order to get Andy Kaufman to do the show, they had to agree to allow Tony Clifton, who was Andy's alter ego, to have a part in the show. So we rehearsed. You could see how difficult it was, because it was Andy playing Tony, playing Louis De Palma's brother. So it was not going to work, so at the end of the first day, we had to fire him.
Jimmy Burrows, that Wednesday morning, he told us that Ed Weinberger called Andy and said that Tony was going to be fired. And Andy said, oh, this is really too bad, but you have to do it in person. And all of a sudden, after lunch, comes Tony Clifton with his two hookers that he had had on the set the whole time. And I was like, ah, where's the director? We got to rehearse. You know, what's going on? So Ed Weinberger goes up to him and he says, Tony, I'm very sorry, but it's just not going to... What are you talking about? I got a contract here. You know, I'm going to be bigger than anybody.
At this point, Conaway is getting pissed as can be and wants to go out there and jump him. And I never forget, Tony and I are saying to him, you've got to enjoy this. This is a great moment in the world, in the history of theater.
Taxi continued to win award after award. Emmys for Best Comedy, Best Actor and Actress, often for supporting roles. Carol Kane came on board as Latka's love interest and picked one up, and so did Rhea Perlman, who would later play Carla in Cheers, and in Taxi played the nice girl who dates Danny DeVito. But for all the awards, the network never seemed to get behind the show.
People think of it as a hit show, but after that first season, it struggled every single year.
We had two successful runs, two successful years on Tuesday, then they moved us to Wednesday, then they moved us to Thursday. They changed the time on us a few times, and people couldn't find us for a while. And then it turned out that, you know, the president was always, like, speaking when it was always his favorite night to do a State of the Union, and we were just all over the place.
After being bounced around the schedules and swapping networks, Taxi was eventually cancelled. Director James Burrows, who's seen a thing or two in his long career, sees the end of Taxi as the end of an era in sitcom writing, an era which put the writers first.
I think the concentration of writing and television on the networks back then was so glorious that all these new ideas were coming out. Most of the writers back then were weaned on books And now most of the writers are weaned on television, so it's beginning to implode and feed upon its young.
Rob Long agrees that the writers who worked on Taxi and set up Cheers aren't the same breed as those who write today.
The people who wrote that era all came from these bizarre, disparate backgrounds. I mean, some of them had driven cabs. Some of them had been musicians. Some of them, I mean, there was a whole wide variety of these people who had these kind of crazy lives, who kind of fell into show business. Whereas our group were just people, young guys, who really chose it as a profession because law school seemed boring.
I'd always thought of Taxi as a 70s show, but watching it again now, it isn't all flared trousers and platform shoes. It was created on the cusp of the change from the 70s to the 80s, and perhaps that's why it's not easily definable. It wasn't an easily definable time. Whereas Cheers nailed the 1980s and Mary Tyler Moore the 70s, Taxi was caught between the two eras.
I think shows now have a more manic quality. They're spinning furiously because the stakes are so high and you just don't get a second chance. I mean, you don't even get a first chance. I remember watching the first season of Will and Grace and thinking, oh, that's sort of interesting. It's not really my cup of tea, but I get it. I get why people like it. And then tuning in recently and thinking, this show is just nuts. Everybody's screaming at everybody else. I don't understand what's going on. None of the jokes are funny, but they're just bellowed at the top of your lungs. I felt like in like weird fever dream that I was watching. You know, Jimmy could rein that in, I think. I'm not sure there's that much book reading there either. But the money's so good or the success is so intoxicating that when you have it, you don't end up doing something different. You end up doing something that you know will be a perfect companion piece to your hit show already on.
I think Taxi still stands up, and there's no doubt it set standards for future TV sitcoms. Everyone involved in the show still looks back on it as a good time in their lives and a springboard to greater things in their careers.
Oh my gosh, I see them all the time. I had lunch with Jim Brooks just a few weeks ago. I talked to Danny on the phone. I talked to Tony just 2 days ago. Carol, I saw Christmas Eve. You know, I see them all the time. Jimmy married a friend of mine. And I mean, it's just amazing. It's a tight group and we adore one another.
And maybe somewhere in Hollywood's subconscious, there's an acknowledgement that Taxi isn't totally forgotten.
I remember last year talking to a guy who was running Sony. You know, we're sitting around talking about what we might want to do. And he said, you know what I really want you guys to do? I want you to sit down, take a few months, and write a fantastic ensemble adult comedy, like Taxi. Just, you know, a bunch of human beings in a workplace, funny, but just a great ensemble. That's what I want. And I said, yeah, and where would you put it? He goes, no one will put it on, obviously. No one will, they won't even make it. But I wish that you could do that.
All right, Chase, can someone get me a cab? Actually, not a cab. Can I get, like, an executive car? Like a BMW or something?